And now the Early Music Show with Catherine Bott.
A rapture on the ruby blood that flows from heaven for us. O rubor sanguinis, divine ecstasy expressed with the utmost simplicity and restraint by the singers of Anonymous Four. It could only be by Hildegard of Bingen, the German abbess whose musical meditations have become such a source of comfort in a more secular age. With me to talk about Hildegard's life, work and, of course, music is Fiona Maddox, whose biography of the 12th century polymath offers a portrait of a woman whose many gifts have led her to be adopted as a feminist icon. Fiona, so many later women spring to my mind who have something Hildegardian about them. I thought of Julian of Norwich, Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, the Bronte sisters, even Florence Nightingale. The subtitle of your biography calls her the woman of her age. How much of a true original was she?
I think the questions about Hildegard one always has to ask immediately are, how has so much survived about her and not about many other women who may have been doing similar work in monastic circumstances, which was the way that women could have some sort of authority and power at that time, before the age of the universities, when immediately women were excluded again. So I think we have to think, well, surely the very fact that there are some 400 letters survive which are attached to her name, even if she didn't exactly write them herself, or she may have had a secretary. There's a body of music, there's a body of art, there's a body of writings on scientific material. All these things have her name attached. So I think in that sense, she is the woman of her age at that time in Germany in the 12th century, because she still survives and speaks to us today in a way that really hard to find comparable examples.
Well, the women I mentioned, Florence Nightingale and so on, they probably knew nothing of Hildegard. When was her tipping point of late 20th century emergence? What brought that about?
Well, interestingly, there is almost no reference to her in any of the dictionaries, the musical reference books, until about the end of the 70s. Suddenly, there was a discovery. I think it was partly a growing awareness of the fact that perhaps there were a few women who'd done things as well as men. But really, I think what happened around then was the great explosion of interest in early music. There was a sudden turning point, really, which was Gothic Voices and Christopher Page recording her music, Feather on the Breath of God, which is taken from words of her own writings.
Thank you.
Gothic Voices, directed by Christopher Page, with Hildegard's O Jerusalem, a dual-purpose hymn celebrating Jerusalem, the Golden City, and St. Rupert, whose monastery she refounded in the year 1150. Fiona, Hildegard was born in 1098. She was a 10th child. And perhaps because of that, her religious life began when she was a very small girl.
Yes, it was quite common for the 10th child, or indeed any child once you'd had got too many and you weren't sure what to do with them all, to be tithed to the church. And Hildegard's rather prosperous family gave her to be incarcerated, really, I think that's the word, with a woman called Jutta, who was a little older than her. There are various reports of when she might have been first put into the authority of the monks. Some say she was 8 years old, and the more common feeling now is that she was probably a little bit older, maybe 12 or 14, still extraordinarily young. And she went through an entire process, which, being an anchoress as she was, always involves, which is, in effect, being buried, going through the whole funeral ritual and being covered in ashes and having a whole liturgy spoken around you. And then you go to the other side of the door, as it were, have it shut, and then you are really withdrawn from the world. The idea is that you say goodbye to your earthly life and live in complete seclusion, and food is passed to you through little holes in the wall. And this is what happened, by many accounts, to many women, but certainly to Hildegard at that age.
In our secular time, it's very possible to appreciate that if one has the call, if you have a vocation, this is a perfectly reasonable, although rather dramatic, thing to do. But it is hard to believe nowadays that an 8 or 11-year-old child could have felt the rightness of that within her. When did a vocation spring up? Is that documented?
She documents it herself, actually. She spent a long time in the company of Jutta, who was obviously, by virtue of being older, the person who had the upper hand, as it were, and had taught her many things. But eventually, when she died, Hildegard almost seemed to find her own voice. I think that's the best way to put it, without simplifying it all, because nothing's ever that straightforward. But in shorthand, she was released into being her own figure of authority. And she began writing. Really, she was middle-aged by then. She was about 40. And she writes of the sadness she felt at being taken from her mother. And she says that she does remember, as a young child, seeing visions. So she always held that she was a chosen person with a vocation, even though her parents almost certainly couldn't have known that at that age. They were only doing what many families did.
Thank you.
Jeremy Summerlee directing the Oxford Camerata in a Kyrie by Hildegard of Bingen, who's the subject of today's early music show. With me in the studio to talk about her is her biographer, Fiona Maddox. It's very easy for us to fit her into a lovely image we have, but nuns aren't necessarily, even when they are anchoresses, even when they are deeply mystical and greatly stirred by faith. They also have to be very practical people. And it seems to me from your book that she was quite a worldly nun in many ways, or her establishment was quite worldly, full of nobly born postulants and lots of rich clothing and probably good food. So it's quite hard to reconcile what we need to think of as nuns being like. And there she is, really one of the movers and shakers.
I think she probably had a sense that she was, I think we now say, a bit of a control freak. That might be deemed a cheap phrase to use about her, but she felt that she was entitled to be very commanding in what she wanted of her own nuns, because a group of nuns gathered about her when she was known to be rather a striking figure. But Hildegard would take no nonsense from her male, they were her superiors, the abbot and so on. And she always said that she was acting with the voice of God. She felt that that was her right. And she got a lot of support, and she made contact with the Pope, who really thought she was quite a good thing. So, but when she wanted to spread her wings in her 40s now with this group of nuns, she decided to go and set up her own. She wasn't founding her own order. Now, we have to be clear, she was following the Order of St Benedict, which was the monastic rule of the day, and still is. But it was her own physical monastery in the Rupertsburg at Bingen on the Rhine, a very prominent place.
Fiona, this is the early music show, and recordings of Hildegard's music have had this immensely powerful effect on listeners all over the world. What else did she do? She did a lot to do with running the monastery. What, apart from the day-to-day affairs of bureaucracy, she was a scientist, she was a considerable botanist and a bit of a politician as well, wasn't she?
Yes, she somehow counted the fish in the Rhine. I think she got up to about 40 species of fish. She notated all the plants and the animals and all sorts of herbal remedies, and she did leave documentation for all these things. She had visions, we should say, that all through her life, visions came upon her. She suffered extraordinary, extreme illness and would actually take to her bed for a day or two, and out of which a vision might arise. So there are pictures associated with those visions, but they're very, very violent images. Some of them are very, quite shocking, monsters and eggs bursting and all sorts of powerful imagery.
Well, the next music we're going to play is a very violent piece in many ways. It's been called one of Hildegard's most stunning achievements. It's the story of the martyrdom of St. Ursula of Cologne and her retinue of 11,000 virgin martyrs. Very powerful it is too, musically, dramatically, textually. And it's O Ecclesia, performed by Sequentia, a group who have championed her work.
Thank you.
Sequentia with O Ecclesia. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and with me in the studio is Fiona Maddox, joining me in the hard task of summing up the complex, gifted 12th century composer, poet, and so much else, Saint Hildegard of Bingen. She's frequently referred to as a saint. Is she fully canonised yet?
Well, according to the Roman Catholic Church, she should be canonised on the 7th of October. It has been going on an awfully long time, and there was talk of her being sanctified within probably a year or two of her dying. I think there was a long time when nobody was very interested in canonising her, and now it's finally going to happen.
Well, staying with Hildegard in the modern age, her language is a gift to album titles, but her writing, both poetry and prose, as a critic, how well written and constructed is it?
She had some education, and probably in the monastery when she was a young child, she learnt liturgical Latin. It's very, very rich language, and it's full of symbol. It's very close to the language of the Song of Songs. There's a lot of talk of the scent of cedarwood and the spices and the mixed imagery of the lover. And I think it's a very distinctive voice, and the response to nature is extremely strong in her poetry. Perhaps it suits our current enthusiasm for anything green, but she loved the idea of greenness and the word, variations on the word viridas, meaning greenness, come in many of her poems. And that sense of rebirth all the time. It's very vivid and very vigorous sort of writing.
The next piece of music on our list to play is O Viridissima Virga, that we're going to hear now from Gothic Voices. And in it, the Virgin Mary is compared to a branch of the tree of Jesse, and her fertility brings mankind to God.
Tu formum est in rami,
Gothic voices singing O Viridissima Virga. Hildegard's main collection was the Symphony of Harmony and Heavenly Revelations. And now we're going to hear part of the music drama from the Revelations, the Ordo Virtutum, the Play of the Virtues. Fiona, I've performed it. You can probably summarise it better than I can.
It's some people would call it the earliest morality play, but it's the idea of the soul resisting temptation with the devil, and it's the journey of the soul, really.
Who performed it in Hildegard's time? Was it performed in Hildegard's time? And to whom? Who was the audience?
Of course, various theories. There's the idea that there are 20 parts, which may have been about the number of nuns that Hildegard had in her monastery, and it may be that she performed it at that time. But we have to remember that at this time Hildegard was causing a bit of fuss with the monks because she had these rather high-class nuns. They grew their hair long, they wore diadems, and they wore flowing white gowns, none of which was strictly what nuns were supposed to do at that time, but it certainly wasn't the way that the monks were expecting to see nuns behave, and they didn't feel that it had the right sort of humility. So the idea of doing a morality play on your opening day, why not?
Well, nowadays, of course, it tends to be a concert performance that's given, but there are innumerable different ways of doing it. And Sequentia, performers of the extract we're going to hear now, used to perform it in the early 1980s with a substantial cast of singers and instrumentalists and dancing, and I saw it, and very beautiful it was too. They put this characterful performance on disc, and we're going to hear an instrumental Procession of the Soul, followed by the scene in which she bitterly laments her heavy burden in life and is urged by all the virtues to withstand the temptations of the devil, who makes an appearance too, and he'll be very easy to identify.
Thank you. et amplectetur te magno honore.
Quod nullus sit praeter deum. Ego autem dico, qui voluerit me, et voluntatem meam sequi, dabo illi omnia. Tu vero, tuis, sequatimus nihil habes, quod dare possis quia etiam, vos omnes necessitis quicitis.
Thank you.
A solemn dance ending that scene from Hildegard's sacred drama, the Ordo Virtutum, performed on that recording by Sequentia. Well, I think one of the most enjoyable things about your biography of Hildegard is that you have explored, in a very rational way, all the facets of her character and life, and you just won't let her be, and this horrible new expression that I'm trying to avoid but can't, a poster girl for anything. She's hugely admired as a woman who came into her prime in midlife. And as you've written in the beginning of your book, she's the darling of crankish cults and New Age zealots, creationists and greens, women's movements and alternative doctors. You've really studied her in depth to write so compellingly about her and sort of not letting these causes...
Be clear, I can't really be doing with any of that.
But what do you truly think that she should be most celebrated for?
I think she was a scourge of the church at a time when it was suffering a lot of corruption. But at that time she felt that was her calling, to lift the standards. It sometimes meant that she did wayward things that were very against the tradition of the church. She had a lot of supporters. She wrote, she thought, she was a theologian, she was a sort of natural scientist. She even, let's not forget, invented her own language of 900 words, which seemed to relate to nothing really. Bizarre words that some that still can't really be understood, or really understood why she did it, why she needed to live in this sort of arcane world where she was writing things that only she and a few others understood. I think she was a very clever and independent-minded woman who had some pretty crazy ideas, but was a known figure and a sort of what we would call now celebrity, known in the Rhineland and beyond, really across Europe. She travelled as well. And these are facets of her personality that all together make up a very remarkable figure. We think of her as a composer, but she was a woman of many parts.
The woman of her age, in fact, defying pigeonholing. Many thanks, Fiona, for coming along and sharing your analytical rapture.
Thank you.
Let's end with Anonymous Four singing one of the most transparent of Hildegard's antiphons, which rejoices in the goodness of all God's creation. Caritas abundant in omnia. Love is abundant in everything.
Thank you.
Anonymous 4, singing Hildegard of Bingen's Caritas Abundat in Omnia. And it ends today's early music show. Catherine Bott was talking to Fiona Maddox, and the programme was produced by Rebecca Bean.